It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We have joining us Justin Holmes, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. He is in our Cedar Falls studio. Justin, hello to you.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Just in the afternoon hours. Thanks, Justin, for showing up and being part of our analyst team. We have over a dozen across Iowa from different colleges and universities. Also with us, Hans Hassel is with us, Assistant Professor of Politics at Cornell College in Mount Vernon. He's in our Iowa City studio. Hans, welcome back to you.
Good afternoon.
All right, 12 days away from the general election. We want to dig into this. So many things happening a little later in the program. We want to have you address this, not now, a little later. In the final days of this long presidential campaign, Donald Trump spending precious time promoting his business. We'll ask you what to make of that strategy a little bit later in the hour. But first of all, how does, Justin, let me start with you, does this race look to you at this point, less than 2 weeks before the election?
Well, it looks like it is largely sort of coalescing around a moderate-sized Democratic win at the presidential level. You know, the polls are still reasonably tight, and particularly tight in some of the swing states, but the map for Trump at this point just isn't very good. He doesn't have a lot of paths to victory, and it really seems like he's not doing a lot of the things that you would need to do towards the end of a campaign to really make up that deficit. He's basically bailed out on fundraising. He's visiting states that really aren't in play and so on and so forth. So barring some sort of major shakeup in the race, which I would find pretty unlikely at this point, I think Clinton is pretty likely to win.
Mm-hmm. Hans, do you agree with that or have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's Justin's analysis is pretty spot on. I think really what we gain from watching this election is not so much the surprise about who's going to win, but I think that there are lots of other lessons that we can take away from this election cycle about how our politics are in the United States. There's a lot to learn here. You've got changing demographics that have affected states like Pennsylvania and Texas. Utah has the surprise of candidacy of Evan McMullen is really gaining a lot of ground there. You've got other areas that really suggest that there's a shift in perhaps a little bit in how parties are structured, right? What sort of groups that they appeal to, right? You've seen the shift of college educated whites away from the Republican Party towards the Democratic Party. Right? Is this a one-time shot, one-time deal as a result of Donald Trump's presidency, or is this something that we can expect to see long-term? Where we've seen some very explicit racial appeals in this election. Is that going to be a common aspect of our electoral politics going forward, or is this a one-time blip in our electoral system? I mean, I think the race may not be particularly exciting in terms of who's going to win, but I think there's still a lot to learn, a lot to look at from this election cycle.
Let me share with you some words from famed election prognosticator Nate Silver, writing in a new article about undecided voters. Quote, about 15% of the electorate isn't yet committed to Clinton or Trump, as compared to just 5% who weren't committed to Obama or Romney at this point in 2012. There's an interesting point in itself. That's one of the reasons, writes Nate Silver, why our models still give Trump an outside chance at victory. In theory, with Clinton at 46% of the vote, Trump could beat her by winning almost all of the undecided and third-party voters. He also throws in practice, there's no indication that these voters have Trump as their second choice. But still, Justin, a relatively large number of undecided voters.
Which I find kind of shocking at this point, honestly. In a typical election, you have two candidates that are representing the mainstream of their party, and they represent different perspectives on things, but they're not. It's not the kind of choice that you have now. It's just such a stark difference between the two candidates on so many levels. It really surprises me. And it is, I think, Nate Silver's absolutely right here. A big unknown is what are these folks going to do? These undecideds. I would suspect that they would probably break about 50-50, but you never know. Certainly it's possible that people are saying undecided because they're embarrassed about their choice of either candidate. Mm-hmm. It could be that they truly are undecided. Could be that they're, just frustrated and won't show up at all is another possibility, but we just won't know until the voting, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Also, Iowa in a toss-up column here, certainly something like 15% we estimate Hans, of undecided voters right here in our state.
Yeah, I think that this is actually a really good indication of our democracy, right? We've got two candidates that most individuals would be hesitant to support, and to me that reassures me that this is not just about party identification, right? We're always concerned that voters are not learning from campaigns, that they're not picking up information, that they're just voting based on party identification. This is a concern that voters are not informed enough to make a good choice. And the fact that there are so many undecided voters, to me, suggests that this is actually a good thing, that voters, right, this gives me reassurance in our democracy that people are really weighing these decisions and they're not just going with their party identification. And I think that that's actually a good thing that we see two candidates that are generally viewed as not particularly great candidates for their party. And we see a lot of these undecided voters. You have lots of Democrats who were unsatisfied with Clinton. You have lots of Republicans that were unsatisfied with Trump. And so the fact that we have so many undecided voters, I think, is a very good sign for our democratic process.
Well, Hans and Justin, we've been keeping touch with a number of Iowa voters during this campaign. One of them, Dan Durant, is a financial advisor from West Des Moines. Due to his work, he couldn't join us live. But listen to what he has to say, because he's been struggling through the primary, the caucuses, into the present day. I spoke with him earlier today because he couldn't join us due to his work. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Ben. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Now, if we're remembering right, you were undecided during the Iowa caucuses, eventually caucused for John Kasich. You continue to be undecided after Kasich dropped out. And last time we spoke, which I believe was the end of September, you said you were leaning Trump. Are you still supporting Donald Trump?
I am not.
Why not?
Because I find him to be unprincipled, and I don't see him as a viable candidate for the White House.
Mm-hmm. You support?
He's not a solution.
You supported him at one point. What was the tipping point for you that made you not be able to support him?
I kept looking for signs in Donald Trump that he would show some sort of maturity in the political process. Now, granted, he's a neophyte early on, but at some point you start to show presidential characteristics. And what I find is that he continues to go down this rabbit hole of personal attacks, whether it's former Miss Americas or Miss USAs. The debates themselves have devolved into this personal attack on each other, where the two candidates hurl insults, and it's gotten to the point where I can't support him anymore.
So it sounds like for you, this campaign has really been a referendum on Donald Trump or the other candidates, or Hillary Clinton's fitness to be president in your mind.
That's exactly it. It seems to me that no matter who wins, the next 4 years we're going to spend being either ashamed or embarrassed by whatever happens in the White House. And so I've decided that I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson.
The Libertarian candidate. Why?
Well, first of all, he's actually run a state. He's been a governor of New Mexico, 2 terms, successful governor of New Mexico. So he has the administrative experience that I'm looking for in a presidential candidate anyway. And he just I haven't seen any of these signs of character weakness. I didn't say he's the perfect candidate, but he's the most qualified candidate.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he has a realistic chance?
No, but I have to vote for a candidate that I think is the most qualified and will do the best job running the country.
Mm-hmm. Are you locked into this decision, or do you think it may change again in the coming days before November 8th, or perhaps you've already voted? We have early voting now for several weeks in Iowa.
No, the only thing that could change my position would be if Donald Trump dropped out of the race and Mike Pence took the top of the ticket. That would be the only thing that could change my opinion at this point.
What is your sense, Dan, living in West Des Moines, about how people you know in West Des Moines are making up their minds as Election Day draws near? Are there others you know in such a quandary as to who to support?
Everybody I talk to is the same. This is a cultural, it's endemic to our society right now. I think people are just fed up. They're fed up with the personal attacks. They're fed up with the negativity, the constant trash talking. And they would love to have seen a candidate that was really above it all.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me out of 18 Republican candidates and 5 Democratic candidates, we ended up with the 2 worst.
If Hillary Clinton is elected president, if the polls are correct, the aggregate of polls are proved to be correct, will you see her as your president? Some across the country are saying, well, there's fraud or rigged elections in one way or another, however you interpret that.
As far as I'm concerned, she won fair and square because the Republicans ran the weakest candidate in the field. Any other of the Republican candidates except for Ted Cruz, in my view, would be up 20 points in the polls right now.
Are you worried at all that the election is rigged in the sense that Donald Trump has repeatedly said that there could be widespread voter fraud? Do you have confidence in our election system?
I do, and I think one of the things that concerns me about Donald Trump is that rather than address the weakness of his campaign and his candidacy, he's looking to make excuses for a poor showing at the polls. That's a lack of maturity.
Okay, Dan Durant, thanks again for letting us check in with you. Dan Durant of West Des Moines, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Ben.
Okay, Dan Durant recorded earlier today. He couldn't join us live because of his work, a financial advisor from West Des Moines. We've been speaking with him on a number of occasions. Now back to live Justin Holmes and Hans Hassel. Justin, so much in there, but pick a point there that really jumped out at you, because Dan is struggling. You can hear it in his voice and the points that he makes.
Yeah, you know, I think Dan is sort of your nightmare Republican scenario in a lot of ways. You know, he's somebody who sounds, you know, very up on politics, you know, clearly pretty engaged in Republican politics. If he went to the caucus, we know those people tend to be, you know, more partisan. And, you know, even he's struggling. And I think this typifies a lot of the problem that Trump is having, is that, you know, you have people like this who would probably vote for any other Republican, and they just can't bring themselves to do it. You know, they're not willing to vote for Clinton, of course. But, you know, ultimately that third-party vote is one off the Republican pile and just puts them, you know, that much further behind. So I think, you know, I have a lot of people in my family that are, frankly, in a similar position to Dan. And I know, you know, a lot of them are struggling. And it sort of typifies a real frustration with the politics of the moment.
Okay, Hans. What did you hear in there that piqued your interest?
One of the things that Dan mentioned was this the conversations that he's had with friends and acquaintances. And I think you asked him a question, right? Do you feel like you're the only one struggling with this? And he said, no, right? Everyone I talk to feels the same way. And I think that that's really representative about how we think about politics, is that politics is largely dependent upon our social network, who we talk to, who we engage with. And so, right, Dan's experience suggests that it's not just Dan, right? Just as Justin said, it's mm-hmm. Justin's had other people in his family that are dealing with this. I think that Dan in this situation is, right, one of a larger demographic that really is turned off by the Republican nominee, right? His education and his background suggests that he's part of this college-educated white group of voters that in the past have really been strongly Republican voters. And are they going to, right, are they shifting away from the Republican Party? Or is this, you know, just an aspect of Donald Trump, and that we'll see a return of this group to the Republican fold in coming elections? But, I mean, I think that that's what's really interesting. It's not just Dan here that's dealing with this. It's the social network that he's a part of. It's that demographic that Trump is really struggling with, that normally would vote, you know, would vote consistently Republican, and that's just not the case here.
Hans Hassel is with us of Cornell College in Mount Vernon. Justin Holmes of the University of Northern Iowa, Politics Wednesday. Join our discussion. If you, too, are still struggling with which presidential candidate to get will get your support, share your thoughts. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can email us with your quandary, if that's what it is, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. We've been keeping in touch with a number of Iowa voters. Dan Durant was one of them. Another one is Margaret Guth. She joins us live, clerk in the Iowa Senate from North Central Iowa. Margaret, are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Glad to be here.
Wonderful to have you on the program again. To recount, I believe you caucused for Ted Cruz. We spoke with you in August, I believe, the last time, and you voiced support then for Donald Trump. Does Donald Trump still have your full support?
Yes, he does.
Tell us why.
I am basically voting for the platform of the Republican Party, and so he happens to be the nominee.
Mm-hmm. So your thoughts on, since we last spoke, we had the 2005 video of Donald Trump in which he brags about treating women in ways that, frankly, amount to sexual assault. Also following that, allegations made by at least 10 women that he touched them in inappropriate ways. Did that jar your decision to, or make you think again about your decision to vote for Trump?
It's disappointing. But nobody's talking about President Clinton and all his escapades. And so, you know, I'm like, so maybe he did the missteps. And yes, I would rather that we had a different nominee. Mm-hmm. But I'm still going to stay behind the Republican platform. And he represents that the best that we can in the kind of culture that we're at.
You mentioned Bill Clinton, of course, but his name is not on the ballot.
No, but his wife is.
Okay, so she's associated with him, and that makes
very much
that, yes. that makes it a problem for you.
Huge, ever since they were first in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What issues most concern you?
Right now, I would like to, because we have such a huge problem with life being protected, I really continue to want to see someone that protects life from the beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm. So would you characterize yourself as a single issue voter on abortion?
No, I don't. I really actually care about that. The first, but it really affects every other issue that we have to deal with. It really does. It trickles down.
Back to what we've learned about Donald Trump through that video and the women coming forth with allegations. Have you had a conversation with other voters in your social circle, friends, acquaintances, about his words, his behavior toward women?
Not particularly, like what Dan Durant talked about. But I just hear commenting, so we're not actively talking about it.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what you think of Dan's conclusion that he can no longer support Donald Trump. I think because he said simply for a lack of maturity. He can't see that person as preteness, so sort of a fitness for president test.
Right. I look at this as Donald Trump comes from a totally different culture, if you please, in New York, and his whole upbringing and everything. Just a little bit that I've read about him, it's like, he's coming from a different culture, and we're not used to that. So, yes, I don't agree with everything. I'm not condoning things, but I keep that in perspective. And he is slowly changing as he begins to realize what this role of being a president is all about. But you're never going to take that completely out of him, you know, the culture that he grew up with.
Mm-hmm. And your view of Hillary Clinton?
As in what?
As a possible next president of the United States, if she is elected, which polls seem to indicate, if the polls are correct, she will be the next president, unless there's something momentous happening in the final 2 weeks of this campaign. How will you see her as your president?
I really have trouble seeing her as a president. I really do.
Why?
Because there's so much behind her and all the trail of different scandals and different kinds of things that she's. You just don't see that with Donald Trump. You didn't see that with a lot of the other candidates either. And she is just rife with that. I mean, she's full up to the gills of all kinds of criminal activity that even if there isn't anything right now, you know, planned or I mean, at least there's still a lot of doubt behind her.
Okay, Margaret Guth, with your view from Des Moines, well, from North Central Iowa, thank you for giving us your your view and the reason that you're still supporting Donald Trump. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's check back in. Hans, what are you hearing there? A very different story. Someone who finds himself with Trump. She says she supports the party platform of the GOP. Trump, rather an outsider in his own party. What did you find interesting about Margaret's reasoning there?
Well, I think that that's a very strong motivation. She's motivated by party identification, and party identification and all that that encompasses, the issues, the content, the policy proposals of the Republican ticket. And I think that people that vote vote for their party, even when perhaps their candidate is not their ideal candidate, as you see, many Republicans doing and many Democrats doing, say, he's not my preferred option, but he's better than the alternative. And this is what we call strategic voting, rather than voting sincerely on their sincere preferences, which may be Evan McMullen or a Gary Johnson or a Jill Stein or some other candidate that's out there. They say, right, who is actually viable here? Who's likely to win? And which of these people can I tolerate the most out of these two viable candidates? And so what you get is a bunch of people who are voting strategically. And that, to me, that's what sounds like what's going on here. She's not particularly wild about Donald Trump and some of the things that he's done, but she's sure as a heck a lot better than Hillary Clinton is. And I think that that's really what motivates a lot of people to stick with their party lines, is that they're viewing these two options as the two viable options. And given that set of alternatives, that's what they're going to go with.
Justin Holmes, we have less than a minute before we go to break. Throw in something there, your reaction to Margaret Guth's reasoning and where she arrives in her support.
Oh, I think Hans is spot on with the strategic voting thing. And the one thing that struck me a little bit was that, an election is always a choice. And I think that's, sort of an obvious thing to say. But we can't consider the candidates in isolation. So you are, picking sometimes the lesser of two evils, sometimes a candidate that you really like, et cetera. And one thing that I was, kind of struck by in her comments, which I think is true for a lot of voters, is that, I think these Trump scandals involving his treatment of women, for a lot of voters, don't hit as hard as they could because there is a Clinton on the ticket. So you can sort of, rationalize that away as basically a balancing act.
Okay, Justin Holmes, stay with us, assistant professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa in our Cedar Falls studio. Hans Hassel is with us, Cornell College in Mount Vernon. We hope you'll join us also, especially if you're still struggling with which presidential candidate will get your support. 1-866-780-9100. When we come back, we'll talk about a new poll showing Americans fearing their ballot won't count. And, of course, that's what Donald Trump is saying as well. Politics Wednesday edition of River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. Back in just a moment. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. As a boy, he lived in a refugee camp in his native Afghanistan. As a teenager, he fled from the Taliban to England. Tomorrow on this program, my conversation with Afghanistan's ambassador to the United States, Hamdullah Mohib. That's tomorrow on this program. Ambassador Mohib is in Iowa this week in the Des Moines area. Conversation with him tomorrow on this program. Today, Politics Wednesday, as always. We like to pick apart the politics, and we happen to be 12 days away from Election Day 2016 with Justin Holmes of the University of Northern Iowa and Hans Hassel of Cornell College in Mount Vernon. Those are analysts for today, and we're reaching out to you. If you're still struggling with which presidential candidate will get your support, as perhaps about 15% of Iowans, 15% of people across the country, join our conversation with your thoughts on this question. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org, our email. You can go to our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's go to the phones with Steve in Marshalltown. Thanks for waiting, Steve. Are you caught in a quandary this election?
Well, yeah, thanks for taking my call. First off, I am a white, college-educated. I was a registered Republican. And when Donald Trump got the nomination, I withdrew that registration and became an independent. And, you'd brought up earlier, will this be a one-time blip? I don't know. I don't know if I can go back to the Republican Party based on the people that have come out of the woodwork to support Donald Trump.
Okay, so may I ask, Steve, do you know where your support is going?
You know, I don't like Hillary Clinton. I'm not ashamed to say that. But I dislike Donald Trump more than I dislike Hillary Clinton.
All right.
So I will, in order for him to not win Iowa, I will probably vote for Clinton against my my best wishes.
Steve, thanks for sharing. From Marshalltown, 1-866-780-9100. Hans, he is part of a larger trend, something you're seeing here, something you're studying in political science?
Yeah, no, I thought this was really interesting what he said about not willing to go back because of the people that he's brought out of the Republican Party and made more visible. And I think that this really goes back to the coalition that has driven Republicans for the last 50 years, right? Starting with Barry Goldwater's Southern strategy. Barry Goldwater was not about the issues that he cared about were not racial politics, but his principled opposition to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 essentially brought on a whole bunch of Southern conservatives who had very perhaps unsavory views on race. And that's kind of been the coalition that Republicans have tried to maintain, right? Of talking about principles, talking about ideological principles, while at the same time, signaling to this particular constituency that their views on race, that their principles made it possible the continuation of those policies that those individuals cared about, those racial policies that they cared about, and that has been largely the way that it's been run, that the individuals governing the party and leading the party have been focused on ideological principles rather than racial politics. But what we've seen this election cycle, I think, is a takeover of that particular group that really views race as the key threat to American politics. And that's really what's been driving a lot of Donald Trump's support. It's not this principled conservative ideology. It's views on race and racial attitudes that really drives this. And I think that what he's seeing is a kind of a reversal of leadership and followers within the Republican Party. All of a sudden, this group of individuals that have been kind of incorporated into the party but not leading the party have risen up and taken over key components of that party. And so that racial aspect has become much more prominent in that coalition than it was before.
Let's go back to our phones. Dick in Cedar Rapids dialed 1-866-780-9100. Dick, are you there?
Hi, Ben. Good to talk to you today.
Good to talk with you. Thanks for calling in. What's your angle on all this?
There's been a lot made of the potential conflicts of interest with Clinton being Secretary of State and the Clinton between that role and the Clinton Foundation. I've heard very little about the huge potential conflicts of interest for Trump between being president and all his business interests. I mean, he can't help it, be tripping over himself from day one. I wonder what the commentators think about that.
Okay, thank you very much, Dick. A good point there, and it's been such an unusual election. It's been a real chore for the media to cover the huge flow of events and issues surrounding each of these candidates. Justin Holmes, how do you answer Dick's query there?
Well, I do think that's something that's been somewhat undercovered. If you look to the more sort of partisan media on the left, more ideologically pure stuff, that has been a concern that has been raised some, but it has not gotten the same kind of traction as other things. And frankly, I think that is a concern. It's fairly typical for presidents to put whatever investments they have and whatnot into a blind trust. But Trump seems unwilling to do something like that and unwilling to step away from his country, his company. The other concern I think that some people have been raising, and I think it's a legitimate concern, is that he's been so opaque with how his business is run, how it's set up, his taxes and so on and so forth, that it's fairly hard to discern what those conflicts of interest might even be. So I can certainly see where some voters would really have some concerns there.
In fact, Donald Trump's campaign is now having to defend his decision to spend the precious campaign time he has left, 12 days away from the election. In the final days, less than 2 weeks ago, he's taking a break from full campaigning to formally open a new hotel in Washington today. Yesterday, a visit to another of Trump's properties, the Doral Golf Course outside Miami. Meanwhile, I think Mike Pence out in Utah today. out in Utah, a state which hasn't backed a Democrat for over 50 years. Hans, what do you make of this travel schedule and the priorities with some of his business promotion mixed in?
No, Trump has not been a typical politician throughout this.
Newsflash. Newsflash.
Has not been a typical politician throughout this campaign. And I think that he is banking on any news being better than the news that he's currently getting in a lot of these issues. I mean, I was talking with – I was teaching this term, a class on campaigns and elections, and we were talking about the discussion about the third debate where Trump basically said, I'm not going to necessarily concede the election, and I'm not going to make a concession speech or something along those lines. And my students were saying, why are they doing this, right? Why in the world is he going to make this statement? This is going to get all the news coverage and ruin the very good first 30 minutes of the debate. And we came to the conclusion that that's a much better news topic for news to cover for him than, you know, the sexual assault accusations, right? If we had to pick a line of cleavage or something that the media is going to cover, they'd much rather talk about vote rigging than they would talk about sexual assault. And so I think that what this is that he's constantly he knows how to get the media to focus on things that are going to be as beneficial to him as possible. And I think that this is what really that's about. This is about drawing media attention away from some of the things that may matter or may be more detrimental to him, and towards his more eccentric campaign behaviors, which is going to highlight his business acumen, and that's going to really drive that story.
But I wonder if we're giving him too much of the benefit of the doubt. Okay, here he has this week. We heard this week he has some ammo in his pouch. What is it? Obamacare, Affordable Care Act premiums slated to rise by an average of 25%. That is some solid information that he should be able to make some hay out of. At a campaign event in his Miami area golf resort yesterday, Trump blamed President Obama's Affordable Care Act legislation for his employees' struggles with health care. Let's listen to a bit of it.
Obamacare has to be repealed and replaced, and it has to be replaced with something much less expensive for the people, and otherwise this country is in even bigger trouble than anybody thought. So we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. And I can say all of my employees are having a tremendous problem with Obamacare. You folks, this is another group. Is that a correct statement? I mean, you look at what they're going through. What they're going through with their health care is horrible because of Obamacare.
Okay, so Trump's statement, though, that his employees that you just heard struggle with Obamacare was later very quickly corrected by his general manager, David Fader, as well as corrected by Trump himself, because Trump's employees are on private insurance. They don't rely on Obamacare. Hans, I mean, you said you're saying he's – I mean, there he has it. His ammo is in his pouch. He misfires. Read it any other way?
I think that he's not very smart in what he says, but I think he's smart in what he's doing. I mean, I think that you talk about what the media is going to cover. They're going to cover scandals, wins, announcements, and gaffes generally, right? They're often not going to get into the nuance of policy discussions. They're not going to get in the nuance of trying to frame the election of one choice or another, right? The big things that the media talks about are these four things: scandals, wins, announcements, gaffes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he's saying, well, if I have to pick something that they're going to cover, I'm going to at least pick a scandal that's going to highlight something that I'm really good at.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I am reading too much. Maybe he's just a bad politician in terms of what he's doing. But to me, I see Trump manipulate the media in terms of what they're choosing to cover. Right, we see this all throughout we saw this all throughout the primaries. And so he may not be a great politician, but one thing that I think that he really does understand is understand how to use the media to his advantage. And I mean, I view this trip to his businesses instead of campaigning really as something that I view this as a strategic decision as about what he wants the media to cover right now.
Mm-hmm. Justin, do you see it differently at all?
I've always wondered about applying the word strategic to Trump in general, and I'm truly torn on this. You know, he does things that are completely atypical, and I think Hans has a good point on some of this, on all of that. I will say with the Obamacare thing, a lot of this really for me typifies that he's very much playing to his base. You know, this is a big, big taboo topic with Republicans. It's the kind of thing that shores them back up. It's pretty clear listening to him talk. He doesn't have the first idea of what Obamacare is or how it works or any of that. But frankly, neither do a lot of Americans. You know, so it's enough to just say Obamacare bad over and over again, and. You know, that's what people hear, and that's the message that they get. And that does him, you know, some help, at least uniting perhaps some of those reluctant Republicans that are peeling off. I don't think it picks up any moderates and certainly won't peel off Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the lack of confidence in our polling, our system of polling. New poll showing Americans fear that their ballot won't count. Fewer than half of Americans are very confident that their vote for president will be counted correctly. Most saying their ballot will not matter anyway because of the political process so dominated by corporate interests. Among the results of a PRRI poll released yesterday, Americans almost evenly divided on whether fraud or voter repression is a bigger problem, despite many studies showing that fraud is almost non-existent nationwide. For a few weeks, Donald Trump, of course, has been saying the election system is rigged against him, citing Hillary Clinton's advantages. Here's his campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, on Meet the Press this past Sunday, echoing those charges.
We are behind. She has some advantages, like $66 million in ad buys just in the month of September, thereby doubling her ad buys from August. Most of those ads are negative against Donald Trump, classic politics of personal destruction, cesspool kind of ads. And she has tremendous advantages. She has a former president, happens to be her husband, campaigning for her, the current president and first lady, vice president, all much more popular than she can hope to be. But she's seen as the incumbent. So our advantage going in, where we're behind 1, 3, 4 points in some of these swing states that Mitt Romney lost to President Obama, Chuck, our advantage is that Donald Trump is just going to continue to take the case directly to the people. He doesn't expect to be able to cut through the noise or the silence and the way we're treated by some. And so he's taken the case. He's going to visit all these swing states many times, as is his running mate, Governor Pence. And we feel that with Hillary Clinton under 50% in some of these places, even though she has run a very traditional and expensive campaign, that we have a shot of getting those undecided voters that somehow have said, I know who Hillary Clinton is. I don't want to vote for her. I don't much trust or like her. We need to bring them aboard over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, Donald Trump's campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, stepping sort of into your shoes, Hans, and Justin, as a political analyst, to a certain degree. Hans, what do you make of the way she's describing the campaign at this point?
I think that she's following a typical challenger type campaign, and saying, we're the outsider candidate. We're in this process of you know, we are at a disadvantage, but we're unique and we're different. That's almost kind of typical campaigning in some way.
Yeah, but what is not typical, and Justin, speak to this, is that Donald Trump turning on his own party, political reporting, Politico, the magazine, during an interview, quoting an interview last week on Good Morning America, Trump taking a swipe at House Speaker Paul Ryan. When asked if he believed the Wisconsin lawmaker wanted to beat Clinton, Trump saying, well, maybe not, because he wants to run in 4 years and maybe he doesn't know how to win, Trump said. So in all directions, conspiracy against Trump is the way he's painting it.
Yeah, and you know, I think in Conway's statement, and to transition to the second, you know, what I hear is a lot of excuses, and, you know, a more competent campaign might have a path forward. They might have had that path forward if they started on this in the end of August, as opposed to, you know, week and a half out from the election. But yeah, I think, you know, the problem here is that they do identify that there's a mismatch in the candidates and the campaigns and whatnot, but they're not doing much to rectify that. And, you know, frankly, one of the biggest problems that Trump has, you know, back to some of the folks we've talked to earlier today, is unifying his own party, essentially. And by picking fights with Paul Ryan and picking fights with, you know, the RNC and things like that, that doesn't do anything to help him pull even the party together. You know, he needs to be expanding beyond just Republicans. He needs to be expanding beyond his base. And instead, he's just irritating people that should already be on his team.
I think that it's also very similar. It seems like it's he's almost highlighting a battle for what the Republican Party is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that he sees this election perhaps as a very very much an uphill battle, and so this is not necessarily a battle over winning the presidency, but it's about controlling where the party is going and what they're focusing on. And I think that that may be – I think that the things that, that Trump has focused on issue-wise, right, Obamacare, vote rigging, voter, you know, voter ID and things like that are really kind of core Republican issues that he's trying to get ahead and say, look, I'm still going to be relevant after the election. I'm not going to go away. I'm not going to kind of go quietly into the night or be disgraced and get pushed out. But I want to be relevant, and I want to push back against other party leaders who might also take that role of the leader in the Republican Party.
Meanwhile, the GOP establishment very worried about the down-ballot effect of Donald Trump, especially in the Senate, also to some degree in the House, though that would be a stretch. House Speaker Paul Ryan, speaking at an event with college Republicans in Wisconsin earlier this week, he said, we'll see more gridlock in Congress if the Senate ends up controlled by Democrats.
If we keep control of the Senate in the Republican hands, and if Ron Johnson wins re-election, which I think will determine whether we keep the Senate, a nice guy named Mike Enzi from Wyoming is the Senate budget chair, and he helps us get these budgets to the president's desk, get these tax bills through. If we lose the Senate, do you know who becomes the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee? A guy named Bernie Sanders. You ever heard of him? This just tells you what we would be dealing with in a divided government if we lose control of the Senate. And so losing the Senate makes it that much more difficult for us to even put a bill on a president's desk.
Okay, Paul Ryan, I misspoke the week before last, not last week, speaking in Wisconsin here. So, Justin, here we are, the Republicans trying to shore up the least amount of damage in the congressional races.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Republican House and Senate candidates really are between a rock and a hard place on this issue. You know, the goal is that a party represents sort of a team effort, sort of a branding, you know, exercise, and that you can all, you know, run together. And, you know, what we found with sort of tepid response, you know, from Ryan to Trump, and with people, you know, unendorsing him and then re-endorsing him and so on and so forth, is that, you know, for Republicans, there's not a great path here in terms of being associated with him. If you disassociate, then you're going to anger Trump supporters who probably would be voting for you otherwise. On the other hand, if you don't repudiate some of the things that he says, you're running off moderate voters, Republican women, you know, et cetera. So I think that's a real challenge. I think, you know, Trump does hurt the party down ticket, especially to the degree that perhaps some Republicans are just going to stay home, you know, rather than vote for him. That's certainly a choice one can make, too, and that's the damage that can happen down ticket.
Okay, we have a minute or so left. Some closing thoughts. This is perhaps the last time that Hans and Justin will talk with you two before the election. Any predictions? We have predictions out there in the media all the way from a Clinton landslide to a modest Clinton majority to a Clinton nail-biter to a shocking Trump victory, shocking because it would defy all the polls for sure. Any predictions?
I think a modest Clinton victory is what we'll probably see, probably a little bit larger than it was in 2012. I mean, I think that the interesting thing, like I said at the beginning of the show, is not necessarily the outcome, which I think is pretty clear to most people, but in the effects of this election going forward. And we were just talking about the Senate, are we going to see an uptick in split-ticket voting, right? Are we going to see more people voting Democrat at the top of the ticket and Republican down ballot or vice versa? And that's the interesting thing to me going forward.
Mm-hmm. Will you jump on board with that, Justin, a modest Clinton victory if you had to predict today?
Yeah, I mean, if nothing changes from today and I don't see anything on the horizon that would, I'd guess about a 6 or 7 point Clinton victory and a fairly sizable victory in the Electoral College. And, you know, I agree with Hans wholeheartedly. I mean, what's interesting about this is what comes next. In particular, what's the future of the Republican Party? You know, after presumably three elections where they lose presidential elections, they've already done soul searching after the last two and largely not taken some pretty good advice that they've been given, you know, this time around. But I think, you know, after you lose that many elections in a row, you know, the Democrats went through this in the past and certainly recalibrated their party. it'll be interesting to see if the Republicans are able to do the same.
Justin Holmes, assistant professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Hans Hassel, assistant professor of politics at Cornell College. Thank you both for joining us this hour. I have to apologize to so many listeners and people who chipped in with their views after we solicited them. We didn't get you on the air. We hope to have you next week on Politics Wednesday. Hans and Justin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River, a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.